Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
5 at 5, brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Legend has it that a handful of coaches believed Patrick Mahomes was a generational talent heading into the 2017 draft. One of them was New Orleans Saints coach Sean Payton. When Kansas City learned of Payton's plan to take Mahomes at number 11, they traded up and took him at number 10. Should Payton have spared his former barista Ryan Pace the career black eye of Mitchell Trubisky by turning him onto Mahomes? And would Reed have done it for Nagy?
Wow. Yeah, I don't know that you share that kind of information with former underlings. I don't think you do. I think you try to save that information for yourself. The idea that apparently the Chiefs did a bunch of work on who everyone liked, who everyone had met with, who everybody wanted to get, and that's why they jumped ahead of New Orleans to take Mahomes. So I'm going to say this, and everyone's going to think it's a weird thing to say. There's a difference between the coaching fraternity and the NFL fraternity. So, in other words, I think that Sean Payton is much less likely to tell Ryan Pace his thoughts on a player once they separate than an Andy Reid would for a Matt Nagy. The coaching fraternity is different, and you might have told your former assistant if you guys are part of the coaching team and you felt that guy, there was no way you're going to get him. But they obviously ended up getting him. So I think, you know, that's why loose lips sink ships when it comes to drafting stuff. But, you know, there were like five or thereabout people in the league that really believed in Mahomes, and Sean Payton and Andy Reid and Bill Belichick were among them. So I think that you keep your mouth shut if you really think a guy's that good because you want to get him yourself.
Yeah, I have no idea how, KC learned of Peyton's plan. I mean, I doubt that he shared it with them. Maybe they had some intel. Maybe they had...
It was Veach. Apparently he did tons of...
And, yeah. You know, maybe... I'm not quite sure. I also don't know if... Say Sean Payton... Let's play this out. Sean Payton likes Patrick Mahomes a lot and sort of infatuated with him a lot. Would they have drafted him 11th or 10th? I mean, would they have, you know, would they have stayed there to take a quarterback with Drew Brees sitting there? And you wonder what the scenario would have been like with Drew Brees, and Patrick Mahomes might not have played yet if Drew,
right?
Because you're not talking like a guy in Drew Brees that has shown any sort of really decline. You know, he's playing at a very high level. You know, he has maybe a bit more prone to injury, but what a fascinating, you know, to consider. Patrick Mahomes still sitting on the bench. I mean, I guess that we would never have been allowed to see Taysom Hill, you know, because
that's right. Mahomes would have been in the Taysom Hill role. Wow.
Maybe you can see Patrick Mahomes covering kickoffs. That'd have been something else. They're keeping it pretty close to the vest, even with their best friends.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to find very few professions that have more tight-lipped, paranoid, psychotic people than NFL coaches. And I mean that in the most glowing terms, of course.
It sounds like it's a compliment.
When
you put it that way, Kevbo.
I'm trying to phrase it as a compliment because that's part of the success that a lot of these guys have. I mean, Bill Belichick is a certifiable sociopath, but he's the greatest head coach in NFL history, and there's a reason for that. These guys have different mindset sets, and they don't go around, you know, gossiping or, you know, sharing trade secrets or information, especially regarding a player like Mahomes. If there were, in fact, this many football guys out there that knew or had an inkling that Mahomes could turn into what he did. They're not going to go around, you know, on a mass text, a group chat, you know, on their phone and be like, hey, you know, I heard Patrick Mahomes is rising up everybody's board, winking emoji and all this kind of stuff. These guys don't do that sort of thing. And even if they're buddies in the fray or in the case of Sean Payton and Ryan Pace, although that might not be like a friendly relationship, it might be more of a, you know, boss and barista thing the way it's phrased here. But even, you know, Nagy and Reed, mentor, mentee, whatever you want to call that relationship, I still don't think Andy Reid is going to pass that information along. And loose lips do sink ships. Careless talk costs lives. Any other sort of World War II phraseology we want to throw in the mix here, I don't think that it's one of these things that it's not a free information share. I'll just say that.
Well, the answer is no. I mean, this is every man for himself. And it's every team for itself. So, yeah, I agree, Mully. The coaching fraternity is one thing, and it's one thing to get together and you know, maybe have some you know, shop talk about plays and things like that, maybe, or players that are currently on rosters or something like that. But when it comes to drafting players, you're not going to be giving away, you know, tips on what your scouts are seeing. That, no, it's every team for itself. So, no, I wouldn't expect anyone to share information, no matter how tight you may be.
Well, what's interesting about this is if you change things up a little bit, let's say the Bears had fired Ryan Pace, okay, before they didn't give him the chance to pick another coach, right? Maybe that intel would have come via Matt Nagy to the new general manager that they may have packaged together, because maybe the Chiefs and Reed told his staff that they were looking at a guy like Patrick Mahomes. So that's where that information could be shareable, where you see teams always are trying to hire from teams that are successful in playing and successful in the draft.
But no way Nagy was ready to be hired as a head coach in 2017.
I'm just saying.
Hypothetically speaking.
Had the Bears gotten rid of Pace and brought somebody from Kansas City. Again, Pace was how far removed from New Orleans was Ryan Pace then? Many years. It wasn't like it was a year ago.
Right.
So Mahomes was not even on the great Sean Payton's radar, okay, at that point. What you learn, if anything, what you hope Ryan Pace has learned here is that you can't show your hand, right? You can't say, I'm going, you know, we're having a meeting with this player, we're having a private workout with this. It's going to become more and more, if things aren't cryptic enough in the NFL, nobody's going to have a personal workout. Nobody's going to have a private interview. Nobody's going to be caught dead having dinner upstairs at Mastro's, okay, with a player, because then you're going to know you're going to draft him.
What if they got a bad knee?
Well, you're definitely not going to walk up the stairs, Jay Cutler. So that if anything can be learned, that's it. That you're going to be very, very, very playing your cards very close to your chest.
Well, I think that's a great question. And for us, it's pretty easy.
Bears wide receiver Allen Robinson sounded excited about the possibility of the Bears signing veteran safety Eric Berry when he tweeted that the combination of Berry and Eddie Jackson, quote, would be crazy. Did Robinson diss Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, and is Berry an upgrade?
Well, that was fun to follow. I mean, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix kind of thought that he was being forgotten and tweeted back at Allen Robinson. That's always fun when players are tweeting at each other. Eric Berry's an interesting guy. A lot of respect for what he's overcome. You know, when you look at in 2014, he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, and then he came back, and then he ruptured his Achilles, and then he came back, and he played four games at the end of 2018. And then nobody wanted him. He was cut loose a year ago, and he claims now, according to NFL Network, that he sat out last year as a sabbatical to rest mentally and physically, and he's ready to go. He's 31 years old. Now, if he's healthy, and that's a big if, then he is certainly, you know, a Pro Bowl caliber safety. He's a guy that you could see wanting in your locker room. I don't know that you would want to count too much on him. I don't know what his price tag would be. But you kick the tires, you explore the idea, you talk about it, because I don't know what the Bears' plan is at safety, replacing Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. Maybe it's Ha-Ha Clinton Dix coming back, as he seems to indicate. But I think there is also this sort of undercurrent that Eddie Jackson has to play more center field next year. Eddie Jackson has to be more free to roam and create takeaways. Whoever it is that helps you do that schematically, then that is the guy that you want to, you know, pay and sign and trade for or draft. So is Eric Berry the answer? He might be part of the answer. I don't know that he's the sole answer, though.
Listen, Eric Berry, when healthy, is a great player, and that's the problem, is the health thing. He did not play last year. So the idea of projecting, and you know what he does, he's got unbelievable ball skills. So he's a playmaker. So projecting a secondary that includes two playmakers is a great idea, theoretically. But you just said it. They've paid Eddie Jackson. So you're not paying. There were a lot of teams that Eric Berry visited last year and looked at and talked to him, and it was a no-go. It was just a health issue, and it was a no-go. So he didn't play. The idea of bringing him back, you better have a starter there that you can move in if you're relying on Eric Berry, because the health is such a big question. If you got him before all this began, phenomenal player, no doubt about it. It's a huge upgrade. But right now, I'd say no. I would not. Maybe if you're drafting one in the second round, I don't know what their plan is for every position, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, Eric Berry, great story, and at one time, a fantastic football player when he was healthy and able to be out there. But he is 31 years old, I believe, now. He sat out the entire last season. He said he got some offers, but chose to sit out to get his body right, to get the mind right, and that's fine. But it does sort of give you a little bit of pause if a guy's missed that much game time action, even if it was his own decision to do so. There's always going to be a little bit of rust and maybe a little bit of that edge that wore off during all that time off. I think the priority here, David, and you pretty much said it, is that whether it's Berry or Clinton Dix or a free agent or somebody you're drafting, no matter who is playing with Eddie Jackson, their main priority should be to complement Eddie Jackson and put Eddie Jackson in those positions where he's most comfortable, where he can take the ball away, similar to what we saw a couple of years ago, and not as much last year. Eddie Jackson still had a good year, but you didn't see the takeaways at the level where they were, where they could potentially be also going forward. So, I think that the thing on Twitter with HaHa and Allen Robinson, that was just a little playful banter. I mean, Clinton Dix is a free agent now, right? He was on a one-year deal, so he's out there. I don't expect him to be brought back at this point. I also don't expect them to bring in Eric Berry. I think it will be a later round pick or maybe an under-the-radar free agent signing that you see playing next to Eddie Jackson next year.
Well, I think the Twitter thing, I agree, Kevin, was a little bit of playful banter, but I do think he did take exception for sure. I think he did kind of take it as a diss. Damn, just throw me away, 14. Just throw me away was his response to the tweet. Haha, Clinton Dix response.
Hold on, can I ask you, what was 14? Am I missing that? Because isn't Allen Robinson number 12?
Maybe it was a typo.
No, I must. I mean, is that just a typo? Yeah, is there something I didn't?
You're right. You're right about that.
Is he known as 14? Is that like a hip thing?
I don't know. Maybe he has a new number next season. Who knows? But yeah, I think he took a little exception for sure. But would Berry be an upgrade? I mean, Clinton Dix had a good year last season for the Bears. 78 tackles, 2 interceptions, returned one of those for a touchdown, 5 pass breakups. Eric Berry is a great story for sure. And I hope Eric Berry does make a return. But if we're talking business here, I'd rather take the younger guy that just gave you a productive season in HaHa Clinton Dix.
Yeah, I think HaHa right this second is probably the better option. But if it's a good price and the guy's you got to have a conversation with them. We've talked about they need a box safety. There's talk about moving Eddie Jackson back to his more natural position of a real free safety. So it's worth exploring. I don't think you should just shut the door on it completely. You're open. Listen, the Bears are open for business. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a question we're going to ask management here today.
What did you think of the Bulls-Spurs tribute to Kobe Bryant? And did the NBA get it right by postponing the Lakers-Clippers game?
I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it. I thought the crowd was really into it. I thought that it was a beautiful moment, the beginning of the game. The chalk stuff outside the stadium, all descriptions of it, it just went all the way around. Everybody kind of got involved in that. I thought it was a neat thing to do, and I thought that was really nice. And I'm on board with postponing a game. I think that there are it is just a tribute to Kobe because he was Mr. LA and 20 years with the Lakers. The Lakers requested it, and the league said, absolutely, that's fine, and I have no problem with that whatsoever. And I'm glad it's not the entire league. I think it's just doing the one game. I think the last time this happened in the NBA was when the Celtics canceled the game after the Boston Marathon bombing.
Yeah, I think when you last night being there and hearing from both coaches beforehand and observing the players walking in and kind of in the pregame mode, there was a very somber atmosphere at the United Center, and there was this sense of that you they're going to play a basketball game here, and you wondered about the tribute and what it would do. And to me, I mean, it felt like it was for a lot of people, fans and players and coaches, like maybe a little bit cathartic, you know, when they had these tributes, the 8-second, the 24-second, you know, violations that were, you know, produced chants of Kobe, and you saw people in 24 Laker jerseys and 8 Laker jerseys and Kobe signs everywhere. And so it gave people an opportunity to kind of express their own sympathies in their own way. So they did it right. And from the signs being lit up all over the United Center, it was probably the most photographed building in Chicago last night. And they did a nice job of putting on their best for a meaningful tribute to Kobe Bryant, the sidewalk chalk. So yeah, they did it right on an emotional night, and the Bulls, you know, rewarded all that with a victory. As for the postponing the Lakers Clippers game, you know, just like I said on yesterday about Sunday's game, if they would have postponed the entire slate, you couldn't criticize it, and you can't criticize this. This is what they want to do. These guys aren't ready to play yet, and it's totally understandable.
Yeah, I think I'll answer that second part first. In particularly when it comes to the Lakers, and I don't want to make it sound too corny or anything here, but it seems like the relationship, you know, with the Lakers, with former players, you know, whether it's Kobe or Magic or guys like Bron who are there now, it seems like they take a lot of pride in having that sort of family environment throughout generations. And I think that given the timing of the tragedy with the helicopter crash on Sunday, in the night before, you know, LeBron and Kobe were on the phone with each other. You know, he had just passed him on the all-time scoring list, had all those words for him, and they had a conversation where other Lakers players were present there while they were talking. So for that to happen, and then almost immediately the next day for Kobe to pass, I think that might have hit extra hard for LeBron and guys with the Lakers organization. So I think postponing that game for tonight is the right move. I mean, LeBron, I think just overnight, well, overnight for us, we go to sleep a little bit earlier, but he did finally make a statement on Instagram. I imagine he'll speak at some point. That cannot be easy for him. Bulls tribute to Kobe was great. You know, they always do a good job with stuff like that, and I think that the response from the fans with all the jerseys, with the respect that they showed and the kind of the vibe that was in the United Center last night, I think it showed the legend of Kobe Bryant, not only as a great Laker or a great champion or anything like that, but somebody who was an icon, not only in basketball, not only in sports, but just in life and across the world, going across every continent. I mean, Kobe was just, it's unbelievable still. I'm still, it doesn't feel real to me.
Well, the Bulls and Spurs tribute to Kobe yesterday was great, just as the other ones were on Sunday. It was great to see the Chicago fans just, you know, on their feet paying tribute. A lot of people in their, you know, Kobe jerseys and everything like that. It was very touching, very awesome. And I'm sure it was hard for the Spurs because they had to also do that on Sunday night and then follow it up and do it a second consecutive day. In terms of postponing the game, I know yesterday I said Kobe probably would have wanted players to play in honor of him and let the game go on. But this is literally hitting home for these guys, as Alicia Keys put it, to open the Grammys yesterday. This is they're playing in the house that Kobe built. His jerseys are hanging from the rafters. This is a lot tougher. It's tough for everybody in the league, but this is a lot more tough to stand there and look up and see the banners and see Kobe's jerseys hanging. That's got to be tough. So I understand the move. It's a good move to postpone it.
It's fine. It's hard to be critical one way or the other on this. Everybody deals with things differently. I do think we did hear a lot yesterday that Kobe would have wanted
to play. He would have wanted people to do their job, to push through. But you can't. You can, but I'm not going to criticize this morning.
It's a tough one, Bruce. It's a very fair question, and obviously a ripe one.
What was the best thing you heard out of SoxFest?
Probably just the things that you heard from Ricky Renteria to all the players about embracing the expectations, talking about playoffs as a realistic goal, and I guess the return of what we've referred to with Tim Anderson, the bat flip mentality. You know, you want these Sox to be themselves, and this is a young team that can be a little brash at times, and I think you want to encourage that and invite that and embrace that. And so if that's who they really are and it's not an act, and I don't sense that it is, then I like the confidence. I like the Tim Anderson having the clinic and showing the young children how he flipped his bat, and I imagine that somehow got back to some people who are Royals fans and it kind of irritated them. But I think if that's who he is, that's who he is. And that's the guy we talked about on Friday, you know, who's the face of this franchise. He probably is emerging as somebody who's as closest to that answer as anybody. But you hear that kind of confidence when you hear from Kopech. You hear it when you kind of hear from Aloy. I thought Jose Abreu singing God Bless America was a memorable moment as well. That was kind of funny. But overall, just the tone that was set of confidence, and they're ready to win now, and everybody's talking about it, and they are acknowledging it and embracing it.
There were a lot of great moments. There were a lot of interesting things said, and you know, a lot of compliments thrown around for various people. But what really stood out to me is when Rick Hahn was asked to tell a story about one of the free agents, he chose to talk about Yasmani Grandal, and he said that they were at the owner's meetings and they went to meet him at a hotel, and they got together all of their metrics, and they went in and sat down with him and showed him, this is how we break down players. This is how we break down you. This is how we would pitch to you. And he looked at it and he said, he kind of made a face, and he said, what about this, this, and this? And he rattled off some other metric type things. And they ended up talking to him about it, and they had a really great conversation. And he ends up, I guess his agent 2 days later calls Rick Hahn and says, can you please send all the statistical reports and video you have on Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez and Dylan Cease? He wanted to break them down and look at the tape. And so he was asked about it then. And he said, yeah, I'm kind of a stats nerd, and I get kind of crazy about breaking down tape. He said he watches 6 hours of tape a day, and that it's just been a habit of his, and he likes to go over all the numbers.
In the offseason or during the season,
apparently.
Whoa.
Every day he just breaks down tape.
Six hours?
That's what he said. And he said that he wants to have a scouting report for the pitcher where he can tell them where to throw the ball, and they can trust to know that that's exactly where they need to throw the ball against a particular player. And I got to be honest with you, that excited me, not about him, but about the entire pitching staff. And Keuchel talked about him and his preparation and how he has a reputation as the best catcher in the league for a reason. And I got to tell you, and he said that Keuchel said that they'd always be hoping he wasn't playing on the day that they played against his team, because he always had everybody ready and did all that work on his own. So that really fired me up.
I'm pretty much on the same exact page with you, Molly. In terms of Grandal, I heard a ton of things to like. And everybody knows he's one of the better hitting catchers in baseball. You know, 28 home runs last year, walked over 100 times, which is certainly going to be welcome on this team. It seems like the White Sox have had so few high on base, high walk guys over the past, 20 or 30 years or so. So offensively, he's going to do great. But the stuff you're talking about, the study, the kind of crazy attention to detail, he reached out to every single pitcher when he got signed. He reached out to everybody that he thought had a shot at making the 26-man roster, even guys that were out of the country. He got a hold of Ronaldo Lopez in the Dominican Republic. He had a personal phone call with everybody just to kind of get ahead of it. And Grandal, you know, his ability to study like that, to connect with the pitchers, to get on the same page as them, his ability to steal strikes, to pitch frame. I know a lot of people don't buy into pitch framing, but it is real, and it does help your pitching staff quite a bit. And I think that outside of the obvious things to get excited about. It is Yasmani Grandal and his ability to help the entire pitching staff that's going to make everybody better that got me more fired up as well.
You think any of those 6 hours includes Netflix?
Apparently not. Apparently he's just like he just loves it.
I'm just
he's
trying totally to get past committed that. To I'm
like, I, he said he.
Well, I know. I just I'm trying to.
Well, you know what? Maybe he said up to 6 hours.
Okay.
Okay. But I mean, he apparently
binge watching
every waking moment. He's been binge watching every opponent.
Well, one of my biggest Sox Fest takeaways was the fact that this idea that the White Sox will actually be competitive and have potential to truly make an impact and be in the postseason and be a contender became even more real just seeing the images of all of them, you know, in the rooms together on these panels and things like that. And Tim Anderson praised the front office for all of the acquisitions made this winter. Encarnacion, Grandal, Keuchel, Gio Gonzalez, Cishek, Mazzara, they all have 89 games combined of playoff experience. And Tim Anderson wanted to say, those guys who experienced the playoffs, we needed that voice to lead us. The front office did a great job of getting those guys in. This is a young team that didn't have a season ago have any of these guys with that type of experience. And now that they have the talent to get them there, they also have guys that can guide them with experience. And that's a big deal.
That's a good point that Ray makes there, but really the whole overall theme from all the different clips I saw and what I read and what I've heard from people that went, there was just a confidence, a lot of confidence. We're finally here. Like we're ready to compete at the bare minimum for the division title. And you know what they say, confidence is sexy.
I can't believe no one said the Aloy line that Louis Robert's going to be Mike Trout.
He said it.
I just thought that, I thought someone would
with
say
with or without the HG.
If Steve Stone said that, maybe.
I just you shouldn't compare anybody to Mike Trout. As excited as I am and I want to be for the season, you shouldn't compare anyone
to
Mike Trout. Eloy.
Maybe that's why we didn't
pure flattery
use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually a great question.
The Cubs were 8-11 against the Reds last year, with the teams experiencing polar opposite off seasons. Given what the Cubs have lost and what the Reds have gained, do you believe the results of the season series will be different?
I don't believe that results carry over an individual series from one year to the next as often as everyone seems to think. And I think that, the Cubs did struggle against the Reds. And when you look at it, that's really where things went awry for them a year ago, that and falling apart at the end of the year. But teams are different. And I hate that idea that you're kind of damned to lose to a team because the players that were there before have lost to a team. So I don't think it's beyond the pale that the Cubs could manage to get their act together. I just want to know who the Cubs are. And Dustin preaches patience. And I think one of the things that came along with that patience was the idea that Nicholas Castellano was waiting to come to the Cubs,
sure,
and that's why he didn't sign. And now you've lost him,
Things are different now. He's gone
to the Cincinnati Reds. So I look forward to hearing his response to this.
What year did he say? I mean, what year? Maybe is that wink?
Yeah, maybe he gets
wink,
out.
Wink,
maybe
nod,
he's,
nod.
Right.
You know?
He gets.
Hey, opt out for us in 2021.
Opt out one. Opt out two. Whenever you want him.
Doesn't do you any good this year. Look. Can the Cubs and Reds, will the results in the season series be different than they were when the Cubs were 8-11 against the Reds last year? Yeah. How are they going to win 8 games against this team? I mean, the Reds are much better than the Cubs right now. So I'm not sure the Cubs can actually muster 8 victories against the Reds head-to-head competition the way that things stand right now unless they make a move. And the Reds are the most improved team in the division. They might be the best team in the division, although the Cardinals will probably have something to say about that. Nick Castellanos, 4 years, $64 million. That sounds like an affordable free agent contract. I understand the opt-outs give him flexibility. I understand a lot of the realities about that contract might not be as, you know, they're very player-friendly. But if you're Nick Castellanos and you waited until January 27th to sign a contract, weren't you expecting to get in the $20 million a year range? Wasn't that what we heard? And that's what the Cubs couldn't afford. So I don't know. This is not a good development for the Cubs.
You know, it's good for the Reds. They've had a very good off season. The Cubs thing is just if they're just waiting to do something till after the grievance is resolved. You know, that's a bad blow for them to kind of be handcuffed and not able to do anything. I don't know if that's the case or if the money has just been turned off. I don't know which one it is. And maybe after the Bryant thing is resolved, we'll get the full story there. But you know, this is a problem for the Cubs. You know, they finished in third, so you already have to put them behind St. Louis, behind Milwaukee. They finished slightly ahead of Cincinnati, and Cincinnati has had one of the better off seasons of anybody. And now I've heard rumblings that they are in perhaps the infancy of a deal for Francisco Lindor, that they're interested in him. They've been stockpiling prospects and assets to perhaps trade to Cleveland. If that happens, I will definitely call the Reds the favorite in the National League Central. But just going off the rosters of the two teams this year and what one has done and what one has not done, I don't see any way that the Cubs do any better this year than they did against the Reds last year, because the Reds are so much better.
Yeah, will the results of Cubs-Reds be different next season? I can only go with what we have in front of us sitting on January 28th. The answer is yes. Yes, it will be. The Reds are going to, as we stand, they're going to have their way with the Cubs. And you look at, they've done nothing, and currently your number five starter is Tyler Chatwood. I rest my case.
I do think they will be different. I'm willing to make a bet with Kevin about the Cubs-Reds season series. I think the Cubs will take that series.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll see if you'll make the bet then.
What are you basing that on?
What the Cubs have lost.
With or without Scooter Jeanette on the Cubs, Dustin.
That's total heart overhead.
What exactly have the Cubs lost other than Nicholas Castellanos that really matters?
Cole Hamels.
But he was basically non-available last year. He was hurt the whole time. He wasn't a big...
Edison Russell.
Again, what a value have the Cubs lost exactly?
But they haven't added.
I understand it. I'm trying to answer the question. The question says based on what they have lost, and I'm trying to find out exactly what they have lost. They haven't lost anything yet.
C-Sheck.
Okay. C-Sheck. Okay. You've answered the question.
It's a Sheck, as Coop might say.
We'll see what happens.
312-644. I don't 67 is the number. Do you sweat the Reds?
I don't.
It just sounds wrong. I'm bleeding in my
face. Marty Brenneman might come out of retirement because this Reds team is going to be so good this year.
Mully and Haw on the score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.